Tonight I've been talking about gratitude that should be expressed in the home, but certainly in the church family we have room. I'm thankful to the church here for letting me come. I'm thankful to God that I've been able to be up and about and try to preach. I'm due to be at Harpersville next week on Highway 280 from Birmingham down toward Auburn. And the week after that, I'm due to be at Isbell, which is just on the southern edge of Russellville. And that meeting was only scheduled this week, and it grew out of an unfortunate situation where a preacher is suing the church for his old job back. And the church learned about it and didn't want him to come, so they canceled that meeting and invited me. And I accepted. I've had very happy association at Isbell. I've never been to Harpersville. I covered your prayers as I continue to go ahead and in the effort to preach and encourage righteousness. I have no criticism of the way you've listened. I am grateful indeed for your patience and how you've been willing to bear with me each service. My desire has been all right. I'm not ashamed of my motives and desires. I would be happy if I could have done a better job of impressing truth that really needs to be impressed. But everyone has listened. I am not aware of any exception. And we've been encouraged by the presence of people from other places. All about. And I'm encouraged tonight by your presence. On the little table to your right as you go out in the vestibule, out toward the front door, there's a stack of little books. Maybe I should have brought more. I brought 60. I'd like for them to go no more than one to the family. Don't pick up one and send it to your nephew off in Illinois or somewhere. He can get one from the CEI store or some other bookstore. These are for those who have come. There's no charge for them. They're instead of green stamps. You just take one. One per family. And please do not take one as a sense of duty. Don't take one unless you definitely plan to read it. It's just a little book, very simply written, on things that make for peace. There are two colors of bindings there in the stack, but they're word for word the same inside, so you have no reason to want a copy of each. Things that make for peace. It's something of a summary of a series of five lessons I gave at Midfield in the Birmingham area, things that make for peace. They wanted me to bring the series out in print. And they went to the trouble to get the taped sermons transcribed. But when I looked at them transcribed, they didn't look so much like so much. I thought my unfinished sentences and so many things that were there, I decided just to lay that aside and write a little booklet on things that make for peace. The Bible certainly does talk a lot about things that make for peace. It's so important in God's plan of things. The hospitality, the good attention, the excellent singing made it very, very pleasant to me the whole time. A different song leader about every time, and they've done their work well, but a song leader is not all of the singing. It takes the audience, and there's been a fine way in which you have participated in that and have backed the leader. Children are an heritage of the Lord, we are told in Psalms 127. And in 1 Timothy 5:14, the suggestion is, I will that younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. It's recommended that there be marriage. Marriage is honorable in all. It is recommended that there be children. They are a blessing. They are an heritage of the Lord. We've tried to talk about the joys as well as the responsibilities of parenthood. There are joys. They make us rich. Little Danny in the second grade over at Mars Hill years ago came by from the bus one morning as he came into school, and he said, I have a baby brother. And I said, Danny, you're rich then. He went on to his Bible class, and they'd been studying the story of baby Jesus. And the point had been made that Mary and Joseph were not rich. They were poor people, humble people. But the question then was asked, were Mary and Joseph rich or poor? And he said, rich. Then the question was, why, Danny, did you say Mary and Joseph were rich? Well, he said, if I'm rich, Brother Lee said I was, and I have just an ordinary baby brother, surely Mary and Joseph must have been rich to have baby Jesus. And I think Danny was doing some good thinking. They were rich. But I think you who have brought cute little boys and girls in your arms this week, I think you're rich too. At times you may feel tired, you may feel floored by some problem that's shown up, or some sickness in the middle of the night, or earache, or whatever. You have all kinds of experiences as you bring up your little ones. But I think you're rich. And when you reach my age and have daughters that are loyal and wonderful, you're rich. I think, indeed, we need one another in each and every family. And the way it should be is that a husband can take pride in his wife and she in her husband, and the parents can be happy to claim the children, and the children can be happy to claim the parents, and there can be a close-knit family unit. It's good for everybody. Children are a heritage of the Lord, and blessed is the man that hath his quiver full. But children have needs. Very special needs. Of course they need food and clothing, and they need shelter, and they need somebody to pay the bills. They need somebody to provide for them when they can't provide for themselves. That's evident. And a man that will not provide for his own, especially those of his own house, has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. But children need a home where they're welcome. We've tried to stress that one night in particular. It's pathetic when a little one is born into a home where he isn't welcome. And at first, of course, he wouldn't be able to put in words the fact that he isn't welcome or isn't wanted. But he'll realize it, and it will affect his whole personality. And in the years to come, if he were not welcome in his childhood days, he'll be able to put it in words and remember that. Some while ago, I spent the nights during a meeting in one home. It was a happy home and a very, very pleasant place for me to be. They had a cute little one walking around, entertaining all of us. But the mother in that home had a father who, when she was little, spent the money on liquor and came in and abused the children, was crude and cruel to them. And they were not made to feel welcome. They were made to be considered as nuisances. It was not difficult for her to remember that, and she in confidence talked to me about it, and here I am spreading it abroad, but I'm not identifying the person or the family. But now the father is very old and not well at all and needs help. And he wants to just come and live with them. Still with the grouchy disposition he had when his daughter was a child. But now he wants help from one toward whom he showed no interest, in whom he had no pride, in the day when she was helpless and in need of special love and care. Every child can tell the difference. Of course he can. She can. Every child. Anybody. It doesn't matter whether you're a child. Older people know when you're welcome and when you're not. And when you feel unwelcome, that's a terrible feeling. But if an older man wants to be so he can just go and be a part of the family of his daughter, it'd be wonderful if back yonder when she was a member of his family and dependent upon him, if he'd shown a proper regard for her then. A child has a right to a lap to sit on. And someone to love and care, be very much interested in and concerned. Part of that interest is shown in the talk. Parents and children can talk. Parents and little children can talk. And if you now, you who have little ones, talk to them a lot, they'll develop faster. And you'll enjoy them more. And in years to come, as they get near your height, you'll still be able to talk with them. It's a thing that's cultivated early. And they talk, listening to them talk, answering their questions, talking to them. Yes, talking. I'm not altogether talking about teaching right now. I'm talking about just plain conversation. There needs to be a close tie cultivated by that communication. In Deuteronomy 6, the suggestion was about teaching, actually. But the children were to be taught early in the morning, and when they're ready to go to bed, and when they go places, and when they come back, and there was to be that constant communication, including very, very special instruction. Children do not get here knowing even their names. They don't know the family by name. It certainly isn't long till they could pick out a mother or a daddy out of a crowd. They can do that before they have words to express their feelings, but they know when it's mother or not. But there ought to be the close tie and communication from the first. And you know, children can be lost for now and for eternity, in a very brief period of time, if the parents for a while are not good examples, and if for a while they do not worship God, it may be right during that time that the children take a direction for the rest of this life, and a direction that will influence the decision at Judgment Day. I've mentioned several people. I'm not sure when it's wise and when it's unwise. But I went for a meeting years ago in North Florida, and there was an elderly couple who came night after night to the meeting, and they were loved evidently by the little church there. Especially appreciated because they were so dependable and regular and such a fine part of the church. He was not in good health, but he came every night. He talked to me about going over to a certain garage where his son was a mechanic. He wanted me to talk to him and see if I could get him to come to service. I went and I inquired and found that he was the man working under the car at that time there in the shop. I went over and told him who I was. He wasn't interested in the conversation. He knew what I likely would talk about, and he wasn't wanting to talk about the church. That same elderly father wanted me to go north of the city, north of the town, near where the highways cross. He told me just how to find his daughter's home. He wanted me to go there and see if we could get her to come. But I couldn't get her to come. She wasn't interested. And then in my mind, I began to wonder, why did this fine man and this fine woman, this fine father and mother, have a son that wouldn't even talk about the church, and a daughter that wasn't about to come once to the meeting, living right there in the town where the church was. I inquired various things until I began to learn about the past. The father and mother who were so regular and faithful and active in the work and appreciated so very much had been active in their younger days, regular in their attendance. But something happened, made him mad, and he quit attending back when he had a house full of children. And so on Sundays, living out in the country some miles from the meeting house, they just stayed and the children roamed over the fields and played on Sunday as if there had been no church, as if the Lord had not died to purchase it, had not given commandments regulating its mission and its work and organization and worship. The Bible talks about the church. It's very important. But to that man, he acted as if it were not. It was children who got grown during that period that were not interested in the church. They weren't about to come to its services. They had not been brought up to attend. There was a good beginning, according to the way I learned it, and then there was a period of dropping out. It was the younger daughter that went with a neighbor, got started and got interested, and talked to her mother and father and got them started back to services in their older days. It was the daughter that brought the mother and father back into the services, rather than the mother and father bringing her up to be. It was a neighbor that took an interest in her and got her, and then she in turn got her parents. I thought the story was interesting, and I thought it illustrated something that all of us ought to know, and that is you can turn your children away from the church by turning away from it yourself or yourselves. We can't afford to drop out. There may be things happen that disappoint us, maybe offend us. Things that are very distressing to us. We don't like to see what happens. But we can't afford to turn our back on the Lord. When we turn away from the services of the Lord's church, we're turning away from the Lord. It's not just that we're turning away from some member who said something or did something we did not like. When there is terrible division within a church, a division such as has happened to so many churches in the last few years, almost always a family here and a family there just drop out. And as far as their children are concerned, usually that's the last of religion for them. The mother and father may be restored, and maybe the children, or one or two or somebody may among the children, be restored or be reached. But that turning away is a dangerous thing. The training of a child in the way he should go begins early and continues and continues. And there isn't any time to turn away. One can lose his own children during the teenage, when they're reaching maturity in size and intellect as well. A father and mother can then stop and say certain things that would discourage their own children even at that age, and sometimes turn them away from the work. The training of children is not easy. I don't know all the answers. If somebody has tried hard and maybe been encouraged by all the children but one, I may not be able, even if I get well acquainted, to tell what happened to lose that one. I'll mention some things before we're through tonight that might have happened. But don't give up the task. You start early telling them things that they need to know even before they're able to understand what you're saying. And keep saying them and repeating the things that are so important, things that are from the Word of God. Teach, teach, teach. As Moses said, when they go to bed and when they get up and when they go somewhere and when they come back, and just Let there be constant teaching and conversation and love and a close tie. Let there be good examples. What we do is more impressive than what we say, but it takes some saying as well as doing to get the teaching job done. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. That's a statement in Proverbs 22:6. Would you suppose it's a statement of fact? Was it true in that generation and not true now? When there is an exception, as I say, it could be this or that. A lot of different things might have been involved. Not necessarily all of it the father and mother, but somehow we've got to watch every point we possibly can. I wish that all the whole church would be involved in the training of every young person in the crowd, in the congregation. Not just the pastor. Let us all take an interest, even to the point of rebuking and reproving in the finest way we may know how. And also by way of instruction. I've mentioned this so many times because it was something so important in my life. And I know if it was all that important to me, it very definitely could be important to any other youngster. We moved into Murray when I was 11. And before that time, it was not our custom to attend worship any place. And when we moved into town, we moved very close to Mary Shackelford, who had known my mother before either was married, either of the two. But I'm sure that Mrs. Shackelford tried to get my mother and dad to start, but she failed in that. Then through her son, she began to work to get me to going, and Max came and invited me to this young people's class Sunday night. I've told you about that. Let me tell you again. It was important to me. It was important. It was very important. It was a major influence in my life. I finally got started going, and soon I was going Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday night. My mother and dad got started some years later. But I want to tell you more about that. There was a group sitting on the second seat from the front. I knew them at school. They were more or less my age. Some of them were my age. Some a little older and some a little younger. But there was a whole cluster of us that sat on the second bench in the middle section. They had three sections just as you do here at Murray. I was very, very timid. At school, I said nothing in class except the very briefest answer when I was questioned. I didn't talk in the halls much. I was timid beyond what you suppose, even after my saying what I'm saying. But when I showed up there, a timid little boy with no relative in the church house, not any of the adults in general that knew me, there were those that learned my name and after that would go out of their way to shake my hand and say, "We're glad you're here," and that's why I got started to all the services after going to that Sunday night service with Max. There were older people that cared. That was in 1926 we moved into town. It was that summer that I began attending. That's a good long time ago. This is 86. That would have been, what, 60 years ago? 60 years ago. Mrs. Foster and her mother sat in the midsection, two or three pews behind where the boys sat. And when I made my first little Wednesday night talks there, before the Bible class, I got words of encouragement from Mrs. Foster and her mother. I know where they sat. I remember them. They had benches turned perpendicular to the main body. They had ladies that sat over there and men over here in the A-men corner, the A-women corner, or whatever those corners were. I know who sat over there. I know Sister Farmer and Sister Cox and some of those ladies that were over there. I remember some of them. And over here, I can name the men. Just about all the men that sat in that section. They were the men that took a very active part in the church generally. They led the prayer, led the songs, they taught the classes. The teacher that meant so much to me sat over there on the front seat in that corner. He was our teacher on Sunday morning the entire time I went to Murray, and I went there from the time I was 11 until I'd finished Murray College and had gone out thinking I was grown. I left home. Brother Brown was the young people's teacher not 3 months or 6 months, but every year, every year. And he was with us in our Sunday night young people's class when we took our part in reading and making little talks and various things in the little classroom. Brother Brown was a great influence to me. That was a teacher who studied his lesson. And when he taught us Sunday morning, he did most of the talking, and he said something. He said things that were important. And Sunday night he listened quietly, saying almost nothing, unless maybe just to say it's time we get started. Or let me get your place and let's begin. And then he sat, and one boy would lead a song and another boy would lead a song. And somebody would read and one would lead a prayer and one would make a little talk. And next Sunday night we'd go through that routine again. And Sunday night after Sunday night, Brother Brown was there. He didn't do a lot of flattering or in complimenting, but he listened courteously, and we knew he was our friend. And there was good order. All he had to do to have order was just sit there in the class. He may have had to call some down sometime. I don't remember his ever calling anybody down for anything in his morning class or his evening class. But he had something to say in the morning. He did a good job. Why did I get started attending and taking an interest in the church? There were those that took an interest in me, and the one who taught the class had something to say. I was fed something of spiritual nature. And there were those that knew I was there. If it meant something to me, it would mean something to some other boy. I went back to Murray for a meeting in 1975. I'd been there in 65, but I went back in 75 for a meeting. It was the only meeting I didn't cancel when my health failed in 74. I canceled all the meetings I had scheduled except Murray. And it was going to be a year from the time of the heart attack until time for that meeting at Murray, and I so hoped I could go, and I did. I was glad. There was a family that came in and said, "You don't recognize me." And I said, "No, I can't place you." Well, they said, we attended with you all those years at Old Water Street. We attended all, and they told me the name. And when they told me the name, I couldn't place them in the auditorium. I didn't remember them. After they told me the name, I didn't remember them. I looked at them in the face and I didn't remember them. I don't remember very well. I don't want people to be offended when they find out my ignorance about not knowing. But I do remember several people in the church, even remembering where they sat. I'll tell you which ones I remember. It was the ones that knew my name and cared that I was there and had something to say that was important to me. I don't think they all lied to me after each little Wednesday night talk when I was beginning. I don't think they all came around and said, "Irvin, that's the best talk I ever heard. And you are remarkable in your ability." I don't think they told me that. They'd maybe tell me, "I appreciate your trying. I appreciate your effort. Glad to have you make a talk." I want to say that any little boy here, any little girl in this auditorium is ours. And if you will take an interest in one of these youngsters and speak encouraging words, you can at least say, "I appreciate the way you listen, and I appreciate the fact that you come so regularly." There are a lot of things you can say to a little boy and a little girl that's coming here that may be brought here by parents. That's all right. You can say, "I notice that you always listen courteously and behave." I don't think that speech will be made in vain. It doesn't fall on deaf ears. And when that little one is as old as I, he may recall your name and where you usually sat in the auditorium. And then there are others that were there just as regularly, and you won't recall them. And if they try to tell you where they, who they are, they can't make you remember because they didn't make much of an impression then. They weren't interested in you then, and therefore they lost a position in your memory. That speech I've just made may get me in trouble because there's some very good friends in this auditorium tonight that have done good things for me, and I remember that the face brings pleasant impressions, and yet I don't remember which community they lived in when I first met them, and I don't know their names. I can't name all of you. Even those of you who think I know, I know a few. I know several of you by name, but it's amazing and embarrassing how many I don't. I'm not trying to say that my coming into the county as a young adult, that I have everybody placed in that way as I did at Murray. The handshakes are important, and they were back then, and those happy meals I ate with you and happy association in your home, that was important. It was important to me. It still is. The hospitality, the visits that I've enjoyed this week, precious to me. My wife and I both enjoy and appreciate such very pleasant occasions. But I'm sorry I forget people that should be remembered. But I want you to know that little people are almost certain to remember those who care and those who know them and who encourage them. And one of the finest things you can ever do is encourage the sons and daughters, the boys and girls that come here while they still are young, while even they're small, very small, and while they are still in their teenage. I think it's a compliment to the church as a body that you can have a young man the age of our song leader tonight that feels free to get up here and lead, and who leads so effectively. He's done it before. He's had training. He's had experience. If a congregation doesn't appreciate its young, they do not take part in services. There's an atmosphere that encourages, and that's what I'm talking about now. What are the needs of our young people? Well, they're needs that parents ought to provide. First of all, they belong to the parents. It's a parental responsibility. Ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Of course it's a father's job. I will that younger women marry, bear children, guide the house. Of course it's a mother's job. And aged women are to teach younger women to love their children, to love their husbands. Oh yes, it's especially a parental responsibility. But don't forget that others can come in and have a wonderful part. I was that boy making little talks on Wednesday night, and I'd started on Sunday making a little talk on third Sunday over at Adams Schoolhouse, away from home. But I was indeed a beginner. But I went to Providence to a meeting to hear Brother Coleman Overby, who was the age of my father and mother. And my father grew up on one farm and my mother on another and Brother Overby on another, and they knew each other and played together and were in and out of one another's homes as they were children. Brother Overby mentioned my presence, had occasion to notice something that he could compliment, and he complimented it publicly, and I was called on for prayer. I was treated as if I were a human being. That was in 1931, I suppose, maybe 32. That's a good while ago. I remember Brother Coleman Overby, the preacher, who didn't live around there then, but his brothers did, and he'd grown up there. I remember his interest. I may be making a flat failure, but I'm talking on something important. You men and women, older men, older women, some of those that meant so much to me were among the older members, the oldest members at Murray, the oldest women, the oldest men. They weren't all that old. But the older ones were not excluded, and they could help, and they did help. A little boy doesn't mind a grandmother's taking an interest in him, or I'm talking about someone a grandmother's age or a grandfather's age. Certainly, where Eunice and Lois were, they would be very concerned about Timothy. They would want him to behave when he came to worship. Surely, don't you know they would? But would not Eunice and Lois have an interest in any other youngster the age of their Timothy? Or a little older than their Timothy, or a little younger than their Timothy at any certain time? It's that kind of people that mean a lot to those that are not their children. Do what you can for any neighbor. Building up the church at Eastside or wherever the people tonight are from different churches. But building up the church where you live is dependent not altogether on what the preacher may say in the pulpit. And not altogether what's said in the classes. A lot of little things. Little remarks. Little special favors. Not necessarily by the most talented. Just anybody with a good disposition and a genuine interest. Do what you can. What do we do for children? We teach them. They need to be disciplined. Brought under control. I say to the boys and girls, your mother and father owe it to you to see to it that you behave as you should and that you mature as you should, learning as you get older to act a better age as far as a higher standard. Not that you're more precious when you get older, but you need to learn how to be an adult as you're turning into one. And discipline is taught in the scripture. He that spares the rod doesn't love his child enough. The wise man suggested that nearly 1,000 years before Christ. Proper discipline is indeed included. Not cruel, abusive treatment, but the kind that brings one into control. The child that is not properly guided and properly disciplined is not happy himself. If there is a well-trained son or daughter, that well-trained son or daughter is pleasant, a pleasure to the family, a pleasure to visitors, a pleasure all the way around. It's more difficult to bring some under control than it is others, but it's essential and important, and somehow the job will have to be done. I like to stress this fact that a child doesn't grow up in 6 months like a pig does, or 2 years as does a cow. You have numbers of years to try this and try that until after a while you find what works with that child. You may have another child and something else may be necessary to bring that child under control because in the same family there are different personalities among the children. But you have them long enough. They're still little long enough till you can try this and that until after a while you find some way to control them and guide them so they'll listen to you. And you spend enough time talking and reasoning and listening to them till you can have the conversation. The discipline is so important, and it's so important to help them choose the right company, the right crowd for them to be with. That may be where a child is lost, is he gets with this rebellious crowd over here, and he's with them a lot of the time when he's not with his father and mother. Children played in our yard when I was a little boy at Murray. We moved in when I was 11, and that was the first time I ever lived close to children. I played with my pets when I was in the country, but at Murray we played in our yard. And one reason was a deliberate reason. The children were made welcome to play. Come in our yard. Sometimes we might trample down flowers in a flower bed, and my mother might not like that. But if we played there, my mother could hear the conversation and know what was going on. And it was better by far. Hospitality is good any time. Some entertained angels unawares, we are told in Hebrews 13. Hospitality is commanded, it's recommended, it's good. But one of the times when the door needs to be open to guests is when there are children growing up, and they, if they can bring their friends in, and you can help them bring the right kind in, you can help see that the right kind do come in, and you can have the fine association for your children by having that association, much of it, at your house. Some of the happiest memories that I have over the years in working with churches and seeing is that of seeing people bring their children up in the proper way by opening the door and having company their age come in. One family that I have recalled and mentioned so often had ice cream in the refrigerator. Refrigerators were not as common then as they are now, and they made not as good cream as in the old freezer, but they had ice cream, and she could have cookies. And teenagers will come back if they're served cookies and ice cream on Friday night. They'll be back next Friday. They won't wait till next Friday, maybe. If they're fed, that's one way to get them back. And if it's the right ones there, feed them and let them come back and let them feel welcome. And that'll help save your child from ruin. The right company, evil companionships corrupt good morals. The right association is so important. The proper instruction, the proper discipline, all that's important. But we've spent our week, night after night, talking on things that I've discussed in your presence before. I hope that it hasn't been in vain. I'd like to hope that I've encouraged some boy or girl to have more gratitude expressed to the parents. I hope I've encouraged some parents to say to the son and daughter, you mean a lot to us. You are precious to us. Let there be a delight on the part of every family member in every other family member. Let there be that love, and let it be expressed and shown by many different ways. We've gone Sunday through Friday night now, and not a one has made the good confession and been baptized. It would do something wonderful for all of us if some, even one, would come forward. You don't have to say, well, I planned this last night and I... No, you can plan it now. If you know your duty, you can just come forward and obey the gospel and be raised then to walk in newness of life. And from this day forward, to grow in the grace and knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Come if you will while we stand together and sing.